Warning, on The Scathing Atheist, it's always Ask an Atheist Day, but sometimes the answer is fuck off.
Today's episode of The Scathing Atheist is brought to you by PassoverStock.com, online purveyors of seasonal religious bullshit. Are you about to celebrate the day that Egyptian guy sort of helped out the Jews that one time? Tired of the annual price gouge on bitter herbs, manischewitz, and enormous flat crackers? Well, we liquidated the shit you didn't consume last year, so we've got the best prices. And now, The Scathing Atheist.
So what can this Pope do? About what? I mean, I don't know of a single institution which has less of a problem, proportionately speaking today, than the Catholic Church when it comes to the sexual abuse of minors.
Hi, this is Katia from Melbourne, Australia, and I would like to personally apologise for Ken Ham. I'm so, so sorry. But not as sorry as Queensland should be. They're the ones who unleashed him on the world without ever explaining to him that we did all in fact evolve from filthy monkey men.
It's Thursday.
It's April 17th.
And a whole bunch of libertarians just paid income tax, even though the IRS is illegal to them.
I'm No Illusions.
I'm Heath Enright, and from Urban Planning, New York, New York.
And Rural Planning, Podunk, Georgia, this is The Scathing Atheist.
On this week's episode, we'll be burdened by Job.
The Pope will accept his apology for all the kid-fucking on our behalf.
And Christians find a way to repurpose Hamantaschen vagina cookies.
But first, the diatribe. I guess I and Hersia Lee can add honorary Brandeis dropout to our impressive list of accomplishments. Former member of Dutch Parliament, award-winning human rights advocate, author, world-renowned opponent of female genital mutilation, and one of Time Magazine's 100 most influential people in the world, but not good enough for an honorary degree from Brandeis University. And why, pray tell, did Brandeis balk on their plans to give her this honorary degree? Well, as it turns out, her lifelong crusade against Islamic institutionalization of violence towards women hurt some Muslims' feelings. Aww. They pointed to comments she made that would sound mean, especially when taken completely devoid of context, and the university says, well, shucks, we can't have mean people here, so fuck her, no soup for you. So whatever, doesn't matter. If anything, her being denied this honorary degree has brought a hell of a lot more attention to her cause than actually receiving the honorary degree would have. But the principle of it still pisses me off, and it's something I'm seeing more and more. What's worse, a huge chunk of the secular community seems to be just fine with it. Now, what I'm talking about here is this notion that attacking a religion is somehow just as bad as racism. People talk about Islamophobia alongside homophobia and racism as though the two things come from the same place. You know, I reject the term Islamophobia altogether, but if we're going to use it, can we at least agree that there's a substantive difference between hating gay people because you're a bigot and fearing Muslims because they're trying to kill you? Ayaan Hirsi Ali was the victim of female genital mutilation. She was beaten in the name of Islam. She was almost forced into a marriage. The guy that directed the movie that she wrote was murdered by Islamic militants, and she's received countless death threats from the same people, including one stabbed to the dude that directed the movie. When she talks about the dangers of Islam, she's not some backwoods yokel spouting off about how the Jews is controlling the world through them UPS satellites. She's an exceptional, brilliant human being speaking from personal experience. The multicultural crowd loves to spout on and on about how this is motivated by xenophobia when it comes from a middle-aged white dude like me, but what about when it comes from the victim herself? They act like it's some cardinal sin to suggest that one religion is more destructive than another, but considering that that is like an indisputable fact, maybe we should at least be allowed to talk about it, huh? But no, when Sam Harris says, well, they do spawn more than their fair share of international terrorists, he's shouted down as a racist, even though, you know, Islam isn't a fucking race. When Dawkins points out, well, you know, the countries they're in control of sure don't contribute much to science, he's shouted down as a bigot, because how dare he point out this easily demonstrable fact? And when Ayaan Hirsi Ali says that this religion, the religion she was born into and victimized by throughout her childhood, really does represent an existential threat to the rest of the world, she's shouted down by the people she's speaking out against and a bunch of multicultural, politically correct assholes. All right, so how's this? Raping kids and covering it up is wrong, and every Catholic that gave money to the church in the last 100 years has had a hand in it and should be ashamed of themselves. Now, somehow I can say that, and nobody's going to say, oh, you're anti-Irish. You're anti-Hispanic. I don't get accused of any kind of bigotry. But if I say chopping off a girl's clitoris and then forcing her to marry someone and supporting acid attacks and honor killings while refusing to allow women access to education is wrong, and every Muslim who continues to support the existence of a faith that embraces that shit should be ashamed of themselves. Clearly, I say that because I'm a racist or something, right? Even though there are a hell of a lot of more clerics out there supporting honor killings and FGM than there are Catholics ass-raping kids.
They're talking about your Jesus.
We interrupt this broadcast and bring you a special news bulletin.
Joining me for headlines tonight is Guy returning from a long weekend of bachelor party debauchery, Heath Enright. Heath, are you feeling recovered yet?
Well, I'm happy to say I have facial sensations again, so that's nice.
All right.
And HIV test negative, paternity test negative. I am not a father.
Well, now if you use the fundamentalist definition, you were a father for a few seconds. But yeah, that it doesn't count if you're an atheist.
In our lead story tonight, the Spanish town of Castrillo de Matajudíos is considering a name change after someone finally pointed out to the ignorant Tanish people there that they might want to avoid the phrase Jew killer in their title.
Yeah, because ignorant Tanish people should stop being such prejudicial racists.
Yeah, so the excuse goes like this. Out of nowhere, the Spanish Inquisition starts. And
never would have expected that.
No, yeah, you never see it coming. And to appease the Hitler of 1478, everyone in town decided that a quick repaint of their highway sign and Castrillo Hill could easily be Castrillo Kill the Jews. Real quick.
Well, no, I don't think you want to change this all at once, though. They could start by, like, toning it down to Jew maimer, you know, then maybe Jew raper, and eventually just Jew insulter or something. You know.
Smooth and subtle. Yeah. Quantitative easing. Spain knows all about that shit.
And at least he weren't gay news tonight. An article in the Harvard Theological Review strongly suggests that the notorious gospel fragment about Jesus' wife is not a modern forgery. Their data confirms that it was written between the 6th and 9th century, leading to yet more centers of advanced learning weighing in on the question of who a fictional character was fucking.
What does it say about your religion if the Son of God doesn't get laid? Why are they
trying
to argue for that?
The fragment in question has Jesus referring to his wife and saying that she can be his disciple. Well, this whole thing does have sort of a Thor's hammer versus Captain America's shield feel to it. I think it's worth reflecting on the vitriolic opposition to the science that we're seeing from these bitter old sexists who are arguing that it's impossible that someone writing at least 600 years after the disputed existence of this clearly mythologized character would assume he was getting some action.
Would this mean priests could start fucking adult pussy instead of whatever
reason nice.
They have now? I mean, even just pussy, baby steps. Well, or better yet, just adult orifice
yeah.
TBD. Whatever you want to do.
Yeah, much better. And in why you keep bringing up old shit news, Pope Franciscus asked for forgiveness for all the kids his church has tortured over the past couple of centuries. So if you are still waiting on that new pontiff to make some concrete steps towards fixing this problem, I think it's time to exhale, guys. He asked for forgiveness. That's almost as good as saying you're sorry. So, you know, problem solved.
I assume Pope Frankel Grabber's going for the Lord's forgiveness, right? I'd imagine it's much easier to get the forgiveness from the Lord than centuries of rape victims. That's
well, I don't know. Rape
phone.
Victims do exist. So critics point out or are about to point out that despite his contrite attitude, the church that he heads is still, right now, this very moment, sheltering accused priests, contractually silencing its victims as a prerequisite to compensation, and refusing to discipline bishops who demonstrably covered up felonies. So yeah, terribly sorry about that time I hit you with a baseball bat, and this time that I hit you with, and the next time I hit you with a bat. No, that doesn't fucking count.
Absolutely not. It's like the horrible tourist saying, sorry, 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 as they try to smash onto a crowded
yes!
rush hour subway with 12 suitcases, a stroller, a large ficus plant, and a tandem fucking bicycle. You're obviously not that sorry.
Well, Pope Franarchy in the UK made these comments on the Vatican radio last Friday, adding that, quote, you don't play around with the lives of children. They're scrotums, sure, but not their lives.
And in Southern Bell Curves news, Mississippi schools teach sex ed about as well as they teach all the other subjects. Thanks to the right. signature maturity and wisdom of Christians, students are being taught abstinence-only versions of the real curriculum, in which crucial public health information like how to use condoms is forbidden. local teens still buy them, but only for keister smuggling crank, like God intended.
I don't get this shit. The Bible says nothing at all about condoms, and obviously God used protection every time except that one.
This is literally the argument. On the one hand, communities that teach Bible-inspired abstinence-only sex education in their schools tend to have grossly higher rates of teen pregnancy and STDs. On the other hand, as if there needs to be another hand, God's dick has literally been everywhere, and he knocked up Mary when she was like 13, so, you know, how bad could it be if it's good enough for...
Wait a second. Religious people with logically incoherent views, I don't know about this shit. Yeah. Citation needed.
I'll get back to you on that. Now, considering the entire lesson plan for a semester of abstinence-only sex ed is don't do that, one wonders, what the fuck are they teaching
right.
for that entire semester? How to build a bridge out of a witch? No. They decided to spend the time slut-shaming females by passing a peppermint patty around the room to show how multiple handlers ruins candy just like it ruins a vagina. Oh. That's what they're doing.
These abstinence-only guys need to make up their fucking minds. Is a vagina a cookie, a chewed piece of gum, a cup full of spit? Quit confusing these kids with new analogies.
And they're obviously setting up the lesson wrong. It would make a lot more sense to have all the students, I don't know, like finger the same prostitute and then smell each other's lady fingers throughout the minute, you know, before and after. And, of course, that means we're going to need 30 seconds on the clock for genital-themed snack foods. Go.
Oh, okay. That's a tough one, though, because, like, so many snack foods are already named after genitals. I mean, you got Mounds, Twinkies, Almond Joy, Cream Pies, Juicy Fruit, Honey Buns, Fudge Browns. Anyway, I guess considering the headline, though, I should start with Pepperminge Patties.
Nice. Love those Girl Scouts and their Thin Minges. Just to be clear, what about Slitto Honey? Slitto
Nice.
Honey.
Or Clit Cat Bars? You know, Muslims love to break them off a piece of that.
About Putz's Pretzels. Fold Golds. Fold Golds.
How about Hostess Hoo-Ha's? No, wait, you had two. So, also Three Muffketeers.
Well done. Golden Clams Cereal. How do they cram all that clam into Golden Clams?
That reminds me of Famous Anus.
Well done. Well done. I'd mention Hershey's Kisses here, but you don't want to go ass to mouth. So, about Charleston Coos.
Okay. Nice. The freezer. Double muffed Oreos. That's the part the sensors didn't show you from Total Recall.
That would be awesome. Wow. All right. What about whatchamacallit? Milky Spray Bars.
Oh, Milky nice. Spray bars. I love it. That always makes me vertically smile. How about Slutter Fingers?
Excellent. And of course, every anatomy teacher needs a set of wax labia. Important.
Yes, and in the sense that you're using the term, we're all anatomy teachers. And finally tonight, from the vicious killers out toddling the streets file, Pakistani authorities have dismissed attempted murder charges against Mohammed Musa, who was wanted on multiple felony accounts, including the attempted murder of a police officer. When the charges were dismissed, Musa had no comment for the press because he's a nine-month-old baby.
Well,
a fucking baby.
But wait. To be fair, that's an 18-month-old in religion years. You know, full year and a half. By the way, why don't they celebrate that? Why don't they celebrate their zygote day and their conception day instead of their birthday? That's when life began. It should be a bigger deal.
This is not a case, by the way, where like a baby happened to have the same name as some wanted murderer. The cops literally said that this infant was part of a mob that attacked police in January when he was going from his, you know, rebellious six-month-old face. They brought this kid to the fucking police station. They fingerprinted him.
Seriously?
Fucking little nine-month-old finger painting on a goddamn thing.
I'm picturing the defendant at the hearing with the bronze shoes shackled together. I guess it's a lot trickier to run your criminal justice system without a whole bunch of black people to blame shit on. I don't know.
I was just imagining the jury of his peers. Admittedly, now this story has absolutely nothing to do with religion, but holy shit, how could I pass up on an opportunity to close the headlines with the words, "That's one mean baby." So Heath, thanks as always.
Evil baby!
And when we come back, we're going to try to figure out why they named Blowjobs after such a miserable motherfucker. We now present the much-awaited Job in rhyme. So my name is Job, and I'm righteous. Of all the people on the globe, I'm the nicest. When you come to my abode, I'll show kindness. The tales about my moral code, they'll be timeless. I'm also rolling in goats. I got camels. See, I can fill a motherfucking boat when I travel, because it's way too much to tote all my mammals. Please don't think I mean to gloat, but my family? I got 10 kids, and they're rich as hell. Their mom's a pretty hot bitch as well. It's a motherfucking mountain from which I fell, because I got a story about a switch to tell. You see, there's this fella named God, and he's heinous. You might have heard about all his flawed views on gayness. Anyway, he told the devil to applaud, because I'm blameless, but the devil said I was a fraud. What an anus. So the devil offered him a deal and he took it. Forgive me if I feel it was crooked. Even though my life was lived ideal, he forsook it. So he put me through every damn ordeal in his book. It started when he sent a burglar to take my shit. Then he decides to murder my fucking kids. Any impartial observer would have to admit my righteous ass didn't deserve all the stuff he did. But the devil said I hadn't had enough, that satanic whore. So in addition to this stuff, God adds even more. I guess he had to leave me suffering on the floor. So he covered me in rough, cracked, and bleeding sores. But I wasn't dissuaded at all, my friends. My life had surely been downgraded all but condemned, but I never was persuaded to fall to sin. My misery left me jaded and small, and then all my pals showed up to console me, ostensibly. You see, they kept trying to cajole me offensively into thinking this was all a toll God sensibly was exacting from my soul quite expensively. But I insisted that my suffering was undeserved, and still they keep on muttering undeterred, this, that, and the other thing so absurd. Motherfucker, was I stuttering? Mark my words. I didn't do shit to have earned this fate, but they never seem to get that there's no debate, so eventually they quit, and I'm left to wait until God decides he won his bet. I say, bitch, you're late. Jesus, I'm the Alpha, the Omega, and all that jazz. I said, did you hear me when I begged you to make this pass? He said, motherfucker, I'm your maker, which means, alas, that if I decide I want to break you, I'll break your ass. And that's the closest he comes to explaining why. Gives me all new young. What a stand-up guy. If there's anything to take from this book and apply, it's that life's probably going to fuck you before you die.
The Holy Babble.
The Book of Job is dense, morbid, repetitive, and dull, but on the bright side, it's the first thing I've read in the Bible that left me thinking, yeah, okay, I can see you having that in your book of morals. It's, you know, it's not too rapey, it's not too xenophobic, there are no begats, which is nice.
I'm just going to save everybody some time. Skip Job. Go see Fiddler on the Roof. It's an allegory of the same thing in musical form.
Yeah.
Actually, better yet, skip both. And just remember to nod, smile, and bend over when God smites you so he can do it again.
Yeah, right. No, I was just going to recommend perusing a Shit Happens bumper sticker for a few seconds. Anyway, joining us to tackle the infamous tale of perverse gambling addiction is my lovely wife, Lucinda. Lucinda, what did you think of this one?
It was weird. I mean, parts of it were good, but it didn't seem like it belonged there. Or made any real sense. I mean, it was kind of like the Tom Bombadil part of Lord of the Rings in that way.
Fair enough. All right. So why don't you get us started, if you don't mind.
All right. So Job doesn't fuck around. We get action quick. In chapter 1, we learn that Job is rolling in sheep and donkeys and loves him some God. But Satan shows up and says, well, sure, you're giving him camels. But if you didn't give him camels, he'd go all Noah and Heath on your ass.
And apparently hypothetical challenges like that work on gods.
Right. So God says, oh, yeah? And all at once he kills all of Job's donkeys, his camels, his sheep, and his kids.
Mm-hmm.
But all Job does is shave his head and say, fuck it, God is still awesome.
And we get full confirmation here that God's a degenerate gambler, first chapter.
Right.
Some guy walks in and immediately starts instigating this elaborate bet about human nature. Oh, and the guy is... the Satan you created? Maybe you think twice.
Yeah, you know, omniscient people shouldn't have to think twice. But Satan points out, and rightly so, that God didn't actually do anything to Job, just to Job's camels and donkeys and kids. I mean, it sucks when your camels and donkeys and kids get killed, but it sucks a lot more for the camels and the donkeys and the kids. So
yeah, so once again, God goes all, oh yeah, on him and covers Job's with festering sores all over his body.
Right, and to provide comfort from his festering body sores, his three male friends show up, tear off their robes, cover themselves in sand, and lay with him silently in a naked pile for an entire week, likely creating a pearly white mass of some sort.
Ew. Probably.
Ew. Then Job spends the chapter poetically wishing he'd never been born. It was quite awesome, actually.
Repetitive, boring, and creepy. At one point in his poem, Job wishes he had been a miscarriage, or at the very least, for his mom to have no breasts,
right.
So he would die of MIDS, or milkless infant death syndrome.
Yeah. Right, so boo-hoo, I'm covered in festering sores and all my kids are dead. Wah.
And all of Job's buddies are telling him, you should look into this God thing because, you know, he can sort this shit out for you.
Yeah, we're a modern nomadic desert tribe here. People don't just get skin problems unless they broke a God rule. You must have broken a God rule, so figure it out.
Yeah, but then Job's like, well, what am I going to do? I'm going to call his 800 number? I'm going to tell him he fucked up and hit the wrong guy with all these boils and calamities. He's God.
But he can't just say it like that. Instead, we get three straight chapters of melodramatic teenager Facebook posts. It's ridiculous.
Teenagers don't use Facebook.
Okay, MySpace, whatever these kids do these days.
I think they're dialing up to those Prodigy news groups now.
Oh, nice.
Keep up.
Then Job bitches and moans some more anyway, and it just goes on like that for a long time. You know, Job will say, shit happens, and then one of his friends will say, shit doesn't happen, and then he'll say, shit happens, and
yep.
It's riveting.
So on and so forth. Yeah.
And it really demonstrates the problem with the whole God concept, because, you know, at a certain point, his buddies are just throwing shit at the wall to see if it sticks. Mm-hmm. You know, in chapter 22, Eliphaz is like, have you tried giving away all your shit? You know, that's a good idea when you're covered in boils and unemployable, right? Giving away all your shit? And then we get chapter 25, which is my favorite, not just because it's like a sixth as long as the rest of the chapters, mm-hmm. but Bildad is rebutting Job's claim that he's living a pure life, and he basically says, well, how pure can it be? You did come out of a vagina.
Right. In Job 25:4, how can one born of a woman be pure?
Yeah, literally.
Yeah.
So a lot of Jewish communities now are hatching their kids like an alien.
Yeah, I saw that in Borat. That's accurate.
Yeah, I saw one in Williamsburg.
I love that in chapter 31, though, Job's talking about how moral he is, and he says, have I not been good to my slaves?
Yeah, it said he addressed all their grievances fairly, as long as their grievance was, I'm a fucking slave over here.
Right.
So exactly.
Yeah. He says, if my heart has been enticed by a woman, let other dudes rape my wife, for that would be just. So, yeah, Job was a stand-up guy.
Real I think I got to throw out my favorite passage of the whole book here. Job 31:31. I think it's relevant. Quote, those of my household have never said, who has not been filled with Job's meat? That's a quote. Job 31:31. Yeah. I had to dig up NIV for that one. I'm reading King James, but the
yep, that's
a lot
what I had.
NIV,
oh hell yeah! So. And all of those people who tell me that like there's some deep beauty to this book, or oh yeah, but it's like brilliant writing. Look, chapter 36 contains the phrase, "Truly, my words are not false." That's shit writing. I'm sorry. I don't give a fuck what a Bronze Age shit. That's no excuse.
No. That's the second line of like a 7-year-old's first haiku ever. You know? Granted, a smart enough 7-year-old, they can count up to their age, but they're not bringing much more to the table. And poem is done. Period. Perfect. I'm out.
And then finally, mercifully, God shows up, late to the comment thread as always.
And his answer is no better than Job's buddies is, really.
No, like basically he tells him to rub some dirt in it.
Yeah, pour some Jobitussin on it. Fine.
So God goes on with a checklist of everything he's ever done, from making horses jump to putting stars in the heavens and this perpetual I'm the juggernaut bitch speech. And, yeah,
do you know how the mountain goats birth? What?
Why would I care? Yeah.
Clearly he doesn't want to admit that Satan tricked him into another bet like he's fucking Nathan Detroit from Guys and Dolls. So he goes on a rant that ends with, I guess, Zach Galifianakis describing the eagle? Quote, it dwells on a cliff and stays there at night. A rocky crag is its stronghold. From there it looks for food. Its eyes detect it from afar. Its young ones feast on blood, and where the slain are, there it is. End quote. So guys, big final reveal, and his big point is that he invented birds that eat decomposing dead animals. That was his super grand intelligent design point.
And he gets so carried away listing his accomplishments that he just starts making shit up. I mean, what was this behemoth stuff all about?
Yeah,
what?
The Bible needed some science grads, so they wrote in some cryptozoology. As it turns out, God had some weird bestiality issues because he's clearly sexually attracted to the enormous, like, liquid metal land beast he created.
All the first descriptions
thing he did. were weird, like, loins region body parts that should really be pointed out on a doll.
Yeah, and the fire sneezing Leviathan.
Right.
God's challenging Job, and he might as well be saying, well, what right do you have to question me? You can't even catch a snipe.
Right, now, you know? Guessing from my knowledge of 80s action movies, I'm guessing that the Leviathan is the thing that Jesus is going to have to fight in Revelations. I'm just guessing. He's like the boss villain of the Bible.
Like right after Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Right, exactly. He gets to the top of the building and...
I can already picture Charlton Heston standing in the middle of the Jordan River, like, shooting a whale in the face with an AK-47. Perfect.
And in the end, God gave Job new camels and children. He lived happily ever after.
And he's not even Jewish! That's the best part! They better be careful giving away whole books to a Gentile, or else, you know, somebody's going to, like, hijack the protagonist, get him killed, and blame them for the murder. I can... Imagine something, some snafu.
Now, Job is generally held to be the oldest book in the Bible, but it's certainly not the longest. That honor goes to the insanely long fucker we've got coming up next, Psalms. 150 Psalms.
I
love religious rock.
I quit.
Instead, can we listen to 150 hours of Ted Nugent singing, or 150 hours of Ted Nugent talking, while he gives us a sandpaper colonoscopy. I don't know.
Yeah, that's better. I guess. No, too late. If you wanted the sandpaper colonoscopy, you should have signed up for that. You signed up for this. But the good news is that buried somewhere in the midst of all that Psalms crap is the midway point of the Bible. So we are getting there, guys.
Slowly but surely.
All right. So thanks again for joining me.
Good to
be here.
Obamacare.
Before we retreat to our coffins tonight, I wanted to offer a quick thanks to everybody at the Georgia Southern Secular Student Alliance for inviting me out to chat with them for Ask an Atheist Day. I had a blast. We'll have to do it again sometime. Now, we recorded a Farnsworth quote while I was there, or at least we thought we recorded a Farnsworth quote while I was there, but I didn't double-check the settings on my recorder, so we didn't. Which pisses me off because it was a really good one. But other than that, it was a hell of a night. Thanks to Don, Craig, Brendan, Wendell, Zach, Chris, the long-haired guy who was in the corner, the two girls whose names I didn't catch, and everybody who I'm forgetting. It was a lot of fun. Really enjoyed it. Now, that's all the blasphemy we have for you tonight, but if you want more, there's more. You can catch me for a few seconds on the latest episode of Herd Mentality with Adam Reeks, and if that's not enough, and it's not, you can also catch me on Atheistically Speaking with Thomas and special guest CJ Werleman on Monday. I'll also be on Atheist Hangouts with Gamma Atheist next Saturday. That's the 26th. Then that'll be live. I'll have links for it on the show notes for this episode. Of course, I need to thank Heath for not making it too obvious how much funnier than me he is. I need to thank Lucinda for taking the Bible like a champ. And, of course, I need to thank Katia for providing this week's Farnsworth quote, though I think we're going to need more than that before we're willing to forgive you for Ken Ham. I'm thinking the Southern Cross and that big-ass rock you guys have. See what you can do. But most of all, of course, I need to thank this week's most dedicated Deuterist Dome, Steve, William, Leo, Alden, Ryan, Aiden, Andrew, Matt, Jeff, Cameron, James, Kiavar, Stewart, other Steve, Nick, Adam, Alan, and Joel. Steve, William, and Leo, whose testicles have Lagrangian points, Alden, Ryan, and Aiden, whose intellects are so powerful their brains eat zombies, Andrew, Matt, and Jeff, whose nunchuck skills are the only thing that Putin truly fears, Cameron, James, and Kiavar, who are so sexy even blind people masturbate to their pictures, Stuart, other Steve, and Nick, whose erections would make Spider-Man feel acrophobic, and Adam, Alan, and Joel, who are so cool they're measured in Kelvin. Together, these 18 sexy bastards earned the right to call themselves super atheists this week by giving us money. Only the most heroic and virtuous listeners have what it takes to give us money, but if you were looking for an excuse to wear a cape anyway, you can help support our efforts by making a per-episode donation at patreon.com/scathingatheist, or you can make a one-time donation by going to scathingatheist.com and clicking on the donate button on the right side of the homepage, or you could not make a donation at all, which I guess is fine too. And of course, if you want to help but your money's still tied up in that reversible condom concept, you can always leave us a review on iTunes or download the Stitcher app, check us out on Stitcher, and then leave us some love in the comments there. And oh yeah, we're really close to our 2,000th Twitter follower, so be sure to volunteer for that honor too. And oh, other yeah, buy the book, it's on Amazon. If you have questions, comments, or death threats, you'll find all the contact info on the contact page at skatingatheist.com. All the music used in this episode was written and performed by yours truly, and yeah, yes, I did have my permission. Awesome. That fucks up the joke I had written to come out of this.
Yeah.
It's funnier that way, but I got nothing. Holy shit. I don't do improv.